Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, delivering programs from radio's past. Mark Livonier, your host for an hour of mystery. Later on, episodes of Calling All Detectives and the Casebook of Gregory Hood. But first, an episode of Chick Carter, Boy Detective, part of a serial broadcast from February 28, 1945.
Time once more. Time to listen to the adventures of the world's youngest detective. Yesterday, Inspector Cobb of the World City Police told Chick of a very puzzling murder case and asked Chick's help on it. A wealthy lawyer named David Markert was found dead on a lonely side street in World City. He had been suffocated. The murderer had laid wet $20 bills over his nose and mouth and held him until he was dead. Later, Chick, Sue, Tex, and the inspector visited the murdered man's dingy apartment. Suddenly, the phone rang and a voice asked for the dead man. Hurriedly, the voice mentioned an appointment and then hung up quickly. Now, it's 10 minutes after the close of yesterday's adventure. Chick, Sue, and Tex are riding a police car down toward the dock area of World City. Let's listen.
All right, officer. Cut the siren. We're getting close to the neighborhood and we don't want to tip the man off.
What do you make of it, Chick?
Well, obviously, the man who phoned doesn't know that Markert is dead.
No?
He's planning on meeting him somewhere along the Battery in the lower part of town.
He gave you an address, didn't he, Chick?
Yes, but he must have been scared. He hung up right afterwards before I could get the complete address.
13 Whitehall Street, and something about south of someplace, wasn't it?
Yeah. We're coming into Whitehall Street now.
Gosh, he sure is a crowded neighborhood. Look at them miserable buildings.
This is the lower end of town, Tex. The Baton Island ferry boat is right down there, see? In that big building.
Yes. Yeah, this is a tough waterfront neighborhood. Oh, officer, stop here, please.
Do you see number 13, Chick?
Not yet. Just don't want to arouse any suspicions. The police car is a little too conspicuous down here.
Blast my shooting eyes. Look at them houses all hunched up like that. I don't know how a body can breathe in crowded places like World City.
Oh, officer, take the car up to the end of the street, please. And wait somewhere out of sight. We'll get in touch with you if we need you.
Okay, Chick.
Do you know which way the number's on, Chick?
No, we'll just walk along the street and see.
You reckon you're going to run into anything, Chick? If that fellow was scared when they phoned you, he sure enough ain't going to hang around here and wait for the police to come down.
Well, he mentioned something about instructions.
Well,
I don't expect the man to be here, but perhaps there'll be something else.
I don't see any number 13 around here, Chick.
No. There ain't nothing but a lot of restaurants and some funny-looking shops and no 13.
You're wrong.
Huh?
Take a look across the street.
Why, Chip, there's nothing but sandwich shops and fish markets.
Yeah, that little Mexican restaurant is the biggest thing over there. And it's number 27 Whitehall Street.
Read the sign over the Mexican restaurant.
Hmm? 13 delicious Mexican dishes. Dine at South of the Border Cafe.
Chip, do you think that's it? The 13 in the sign above, and the south part in the name of the place.
I'll bet money it is. Come on. We're going over for some genuine Mexican food and probably a whole lot more.
I guess this was a shot in the dark, Chick. There ain't nothing in this joint. Pretty mealy, if you ask me.
Well, we'll wait a few minutes more. This table is placed in a little alcove, and you can see the floor distinctly without being noticed by all the other people.
Well, everything looks perfectly harmless to me, Chick. Just a lot of people eating.
Yeah. Anyway, it seems like home to get a nice dish of tamales. Have some more, Sue.
No, thanks, Chick. The roof of my mouth is scorched now.
Wait a second.
Huh?
This looks interesting.
Well?
Look over by the door.
You mean that big fat fellow that just come in?
Yes, he's looking around. He seems to be trying to find someone.
Maybe he's looking for his wife.
No. He's going up to the cashier.
Well, there's nothing to get excited about, is there, Chick?
He's just asking the fellow with the money.
Wait. Not quite. Look.
Huh?
He's giving the man at the desk a letter.
You think perhaps he's the one the message mentioned?
Maybe. Now, look. The fat man's going to the back of the restaurant. Yes, he's going up the flight of steps at the rear. Tex, I want you to do something.
Sure, what?
This is a shot in the dark, but it might work.
Huh?
I want you to go up to the desk and ask that clerk if anyone has left a letter here for Mr. David Markert.
You mean the dead fella? The one that was smothered with the $20 bills?
Right. Leave your cowboy hat here. Lawyers don't wear them in World City.
Okay, partner. I'll see what I can do. I act just like a lawyer.
Good. And if that letter is for Markert, pay your check and go out.
Uh-huh.
Hurry down to the police car at the corner and wait for us.
All right. Here goes, partner. Here goes.
This looks like a very slim chance, Chick. After all, you have no proof this fat man has anything to do with the man who phoned.
Yes, I know that, Sue. There's not much doubt about this place being the one mentioned on the phone.
Look at Tex. The man at the counter is handing him the letter. You were right, Chick.
Well, now let him get out.
Look, Chick.
What?
The fat man is coming back. You'll see Tex.
Oh, gosh, come on. Come on, he's seen it already.
He's snatching the letter out of Tex's hand. He's going out the door.
Come back here, you cuss. You! I'll kill you where you stand.
Now, don't shoot, Tex. Don't cause any trouble. We've proved one thing. That fat man is the man who phoned, and that letter must be pretty important stuff. Come on, after him. Sue, run down to the corner as fast as you can. Tell that policeman what happened. Tell him what the fat man looked like.
All right, Chick.
Hey, Chick, look. There he goes. He's heading into that ferry boat building.
Sue, tell the policeman to call headquarters, to cover the ferry building and watch for the fat man. Tell him to get a hold of the Baton Island police just in case he decides to take the boat ride and be on guard at that end.
All right, Chick. I'll get him.
You come with me, Tex.
Right.
We're going after him. We've got to find that man before he gets away.
A few minutes before Chick, Sue, and Tex raced after the fat man with the letter, in a parked sedan across the street from the Baton Island ferry and the Mexican restaurant, two men watch the people on the sidewalks. One is Chatter Zipponi, a smooth mobster, and the other is Fred Dite, a killer. Zipponi is speaking.
What time is it?
Noontime. I'm hungry.
Shut up.
Okay.
This guy Hammond ought to show up pretty soon. You deal with these Park Avenue hot shots, they go yellow on you just before things start to happen.
Yeah, maybe his watch is slow.
You got stones in your head. Mrs. Oliver figured this thing out. Hammond and Mark was all set for their part. But naturally, they had to hire me, Zipponi, to put the finishing touches on it.
How much does this job pay?
What do you care? I always give you a cut, don't I?
Yeah, sure. Only when you're working with the Park Avenue Society, boys, I like to see you get what's coming to you, boys.
I always get what's coming to me. Remember that.
When do we pull the job off?
And that's what we're here to find out. The instructions were mailed to Hammond. He's supposed to leave them at that Mexican joint over there for another guy to pick up and deliver to us. We burned the instructions.
Huh.
Pretty good, ain't it?
Yeah.
Keeps all this Park Avenue crumb with clean hands. Nobody knows where the orders come from.
Hey, Chatter.
Huh?
Look over by that Mexican. There's a guy tearing out of the door. Look.
Huh? Hey, that's Hammond. Come on.
Hey, nix it, Chatter. There's two guys running after him. See? One of them's got a cowboy hat on and some fancy-looking boots.
I don't like this. Open the door. We'll find out.
You want me to stop those two guys?
Yeah, get after him. Don't shoot unless you got it.
Yeah.
What's the matter with that guy, Hammond? He's running for the ferry boat. He knows where we are.
It's going to pull out in a couple of seconds.
Get on that boat. Hurry. Don't let Hammond or those two guys get away from you. And be sure he hangs on to that envelope.
Right.
He must have it on him now. Don't let the other two guys get it.
Don't worry, Chatter. I know what to do to guys who can't mind their own business.
Well, Tex, he's on this boat. I'm positive of that. There certainly isn't a sign of him so far. We've been all over both passenger decks.
There ain't no way he could have slipped out of here, is there? I mean, off the boat.
No, we just barely leaped on the boat as it was pulling out of the pier. The fat man was ahead of us. Don't think he'd be likely to leap into the river.
No, I don't reckon so. Not with the blocks of ice floating around in it like this. How about going upstairs again for another look around?
Okay, come on. He's either hiding in one of the cars below or in the engine room, I think.
We ain't got too much time, have we, Chick? She's just about ready to pull into Baton Island now.
Well, the police will be waiting at the dock. But I want to find that man first.
Mm.
He isn't apt to get away. It's just a process of elimination.
Mighty funny way to act, partner. Let me tell you, for a fat man, he sure can't run.
Yeah. They've cut the motors of the boat already.
Yeah.
We've got to work fast.
All the people are commencing to go up to the front of the boat.
Yes, we've got to... There he is, Captain. Yeah. Look, he's been in the life preserver cabinet on the side.
Yeah?
See? He's easing the door open. Come on.
With pleasure.
He hasn't seen us yet. We can surprise him.
He's heading for the dock. And he's going mighty fast. Knows somebody must be laying for him.
Come on, fast. Don't make any noise. Don't want to cause any scene. Now, just a minute. Not so fast there, please.
Why, I don't know you.
I'm sorry, but I have to talk to you.
What is this? A hold up? Let go of me.
Now, there might be a hold up at that, but I'm not holding you up, mister. Now, listen to reason for a minute.
Take your hands off me. I'm a respectable businessman, and I'm not in the habit of being accosted by strangers on ferry boats. And if you're trying to panhandle, I'll turn you over to a guard. Now, make up your mind. Are you going to let me alone?
Don't get excited. I've got to talk to you.
I won't let him get away, Chick.
Oh, so you've got your gang with you, eh? Well, you won't get away with this. There are a lot of people around, and I'll just make an outcry.
Go ahead and make your outcry, if you dare.
Just what do you mean by that?
You know perfectly well what I mean.
Getting awful tough for a guy who just don't want to be talked to, appears to me.
You're absolutely right, Tex. Well, how about it, mister? Will you listen to a little sensible conversation, or shall we save you the trouble and call the police?
Why, I don't understand. There's no use getting the police, I guess. I just was startled. You know, you run into a lot of strange people these days. Well, I'm a man who minds my own business. All right. Tell me, what is this all about, and then I'm getting out of here. I'm in a hurry.
We're representing the police department. You snatched a letter from this man here in that Mexican restaurant back in World City. May I see it?
Certainly not. This letter is intended for a friend of mine, Mr. Market. This person here tried to steal it. I had every right to take it away from him.
Perhaps you didn't know that Mr. Markert was murdered last night.
No. Oh, no, it can't be true.
Yes, it's true, but it hasn't been released to the papers yet. Now, look, there are policemen waiting at the pier. They'd like to talk to you about Markert. Apparently, you intended to meet him last night.
Why, yes, I did. I sent him a note, a business arrangement, but good heavens, murdered. It's fantastic.
Well, come on, we'll talk it over when we have a little more privacy.
You want I should go ahead and get the police, Chick?
We'll find them as soon as we get off.
Do I understand that I'm being put under arrest?
No, not at all. We'd just like to talk to you. Now, there's nothing to get excited about. If you're innocent, you have nothing to worry about. You know that.
Better hurry, Chick. Most of the people are off the boat.
All right, you guys. Let go of that fat boy.
Don't move, Tex.
That's right, pal. Don't move. And you stay where you are, cowboy.
Well, what is this?
You got that letter on you?
Yes.
Good. All right now, you two guys. I got a gun in your back. If you know what's good for you, you get inside that closet and stay there and stay quiet. I can rid you awful fast if you try anything.
Well, we'd be glad to. We'd just go right along like this. Just a little bit further. Now, see what you can do about this.
You crumb. I told you not to try anything.
Grab him, Tex. Quick. Get his gun. Don't let him get away.
No, you don't. Get back, you guys. Get back. Run, fat boy. Run. I gotta see that you're taken care of.
Run, Tex, we gotta stop them.
Get back, you guys, get back.
Stop, Tex, he's gonna shoot.
That'll take care of the two wise guys. Come on, my fat friend. That letter you're carrying is mighty important to the boss. We gotta see that you're well taken care of. And I don't want no cops sticking their nose in either.
What has happened to Chicken Tex? Have the mad gunman's shots injured them? Or have they escaped? And what's the secret of the envelope which the fat man is carrying? Don't miss the next exciting episode in the adventures of Chick Carter, Boy Detective.
Mutual to YOU, that is all. Be sure to tune in again tomorrow, same wavelength, same time.
YOU to Mutual, your message received. We'll be waiting for you. Signing off.
Chick Carter, Boy Detective, is heard every weekday afternoon at this same time over most of these stations.
Chick Carter, Boy Detective, on Tuned to Yesterday, a Mutual Broadcasting System episode from February 28, 1945. This is an hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Time now for an episode of a program heard daily on WGN Chicago in the later 1940s. This episode from September 24, 1948.
Calling all detectives. Where there's a will, there's a way. But I once had a case of a will that pointed the wrong way. That is the situation on this page from my casebook. The casebook of Jerry Browning, private detective. A private detective like me, Jerry Browning, generally knows when somebody is talking through his hat. I saw this hat before I saw its owner. It was an antique derby thrust by a shaking hand through my opened office door.
I'm Simpson, Mr. Browning, butler to the late Mrs. Thaddeus Morgan. Do you know her name?
I'll say I did. Mrs. Thaddeus Morgan was one of those leftovers from the Victorian era. An elderly lady whose fortune had been founded on buying up farmland where skyscrapers were later to be built. Very simple, if you were born long ago enough and with good judgment. I gave Simpson the best chair to sit on, the one that didn't creak. What's your trouble, Mr. Simpson?
I worked for Mrs. Morgan 32 years, Mr. Browning. The morning of the day she died, she asked me to witness a document. I assumed it was on your will, though naturally I did not read it. She then asked me to locate her two sons, Mr. Ted and young Richard. Neither of them is married. They both live at home, but were out at the time. Before they could return, it was too late. Mrs. Morgan had passed on.
Okay. And what seems to be the trouble?
Mr. Browning, I saw Mrs. Morgan put that will under her pillow, and it has not been seen since. Out of loyalty to her memory, I will pay you $500 to recover the will from whomever now has it.
When the wealthy Mrs. Thaddeus Morgan died, her butler hired me to recover a missing will. Driving back to the Morgan home with Simpson, I asked a few questions. In whose favor was the new will drawn?
I'm sorry, sir. I didn't read it.
What about the old will? In whose favor was that one?
Except for some charities and gifts to our servants, everything was evenly divided between our two sons, Ted and Richard. However, Mr. Ted has been, well, in some escapades. Mrs. Morgan quite recently threatened to cut him out of her will.
We met Richard Morgan as we entered the house. He was waving a folded piece of paper.
Look, Simpson, Mother's new will. I found it in the trash barrel. It must have fallen from a pillow into the wastebasket.
I introduced myself, took the will, and glanced over it. It was handwritten in an angular, spidery scrawl and bore the names of Simpson and Mrs. Morgan's nurse as witnesses. I turned to Richard. Have you read the terms of this will? Richard made a wry face.
Yes, I read it. I'm left $10,000. The balance goes to my brother, Ted.
But Simpson told me... I mean, I understand your mother didn't approve of Ted. Threatened to disinherit him. Richard shrugged.
I guess that was just a way of keeping him in line.
Simpson gulped, looked at me unhappily. I gave him the will. Mr. Simpson, since the will has been recovered, you obviously don't need my services and you don't owe me anything. Bye, Mr. Morgan. That should have been the end. Actually, it was only the beginning. An hour later, Simpson called me back. He was practically incoherent with excitement.
Mr. Browning, that will, it's a forgery. My signature was forged, so was Mrs. Morgan's and the nurse's. I want you to find out who did it. Please come here at once.
This time, both brothers were at the Morgan house. Ted, the one who stood to gain by the new will, came up to me.
Look, Mr. Browning, I don't know what this is all about. I didn't expect to get anything from my mother's will, but if she did leave the money to me, then I intend to defend my right to it.
You'll get that chance, Ted. In court. George Barry was the lawyer Richard Morgan hired to prove the will a forgery. And in court...
Mr. Simpson, I ask you to look at this document bearing your signature. Is this, in fact, your signature?
It is not. That is a forgery.
I saw Ted Morgan sitting up front and listening, his face stony as a whole parade of expert witnesses denounced the will as a clumsy forgery. Then the family physician was called to the stand.
Doctor, do you believe there was anything strange or suspicious about Mrs. Morgan's death?
It was the question everybody had been waiting for. The doctor glared at the lawyer.
There certainly was not. Mrs. Morgan's death was the result of a heart condition for which she had been treated over a long period of years.
That was the high point of the case, and it turned out to be an anticlimax. Thereafter, the trial droned on to its inevitable conclusion. The new will was declared invalid, and the old will, the one that divided the estate equally between both brothers, was reinstated. But as the judge handed down his decision...
The court takes cognizance of the fact that a forged will cannot exist without a forger and recommends to the district attorney that appropriate action be taken. This court is adjourned.
I was right behind Ted Morgan as he walked alone and defeated out of the courtroom. carpet in the corridor.
Mr. Morgan, I have here a warrant for your arrest and a charge of forgery.
Yeah? My job was finished. I'd earned my money. But I wasn't happy. Ted Morgan had never impressed me as a fool. Yet only a fool could have hoped to get away with such a forgery. One that involved a completely handwritten document and the signatures of two other people. The more I thought about it, the less sense it made. And later that afternoon, at the bank where Mrs. Morgan had kept her checking account...
Mr. Browning, during the last year of Mrs. Morgan's illness, four checks with her signature forged came to the bank. I personally showed Mrs. Morgan the checks, and she instructed me to honor them and to take no action whatever. Naturally, I respected her wishes.
I see. Thank you very much. I found Richard Morgan in his room at home. What I was looking for was on the walls, a group of watercolor paintings signed with his name. Richard, you forged that will in your brother's favor. You're an artist, and you could do a fair job of forgery, especially a forgery that you wanted found out. You also forged your mother's signature to checks. She found out and made a new will in Ted's favor. You destroyed that one and made an identical copy of it, knowing that it would be invalidated and your brother arrested. He tried blustering, and when that failed, took a shot at me. He was guilty of the forgeries, of course. The same handwriting experts who denounced the fake will also proved that only Richard could have written it. He was convicted on a long series of counts. Forgery, perjury, and wound up with 10 years in which to think things over. Like I said, you can get away with a lot of phony talk. But when you put it on paper, you'd better be careful about whose name you sign.
Calling all detectives on Tuned to Yesterday, an episode from the 24th of September, 1948 from WGN Chicago. We close out this hour of mystery now on Tuned to Yesterday with a broadcast of the casebook of Gregory Hood. During the mid-1940s, to millions of radio and movie fans, Basil Rathbone was known as the Sherlock Holmes, which he portrayed in 14 motion pictures and in a long-running radio series since the 1930s, and it was in 1946 that he decided that he was being typecast as Holmes and departed the show. In its stead, this program was put in place on the Mutual Broadcasting System with the same writers of the program, Anthony Boucher and Dennis Green, called The Casebook of Gregory Hood. This episode called The Eloquent Corpse from October 14th, 1946.
Petri Wine brings you The Casebook of Gregory Hood. Tonight, the Petri family that took time to bring you good wine, invite you to listen to the story of The Eloquent Corpse, another exciting adventure from The Casebook of Gregory Hood. But before we get started, I'd like to tell you about one swell dessert. Chilled fruit with Petri California Muscatel wine. It's really wonderful and so easy to fix. Just put chilled fruits in a dish and pour chilled Petri Muscatel wine over them. That's all there is to it. And is it good? You just couldn't ask for anything better than Petri Muscatel with chilled fruits. Just be sure you get Petri Muscatel. Petri Muscatel is such a fine wine. Beautifully golden in color, with a marvelous, full, rich flavor. Believe me, Petri Muscatel is really good. And you can serve that Petri Muscatel proudly, because those five letters, P-E-T-R-I, spell the proudest name in the long history of fine wine. Petri. Once again, it's Monday night in San Francisco, and time to hear another chapter from the casebook of that celebrated importer and man about town, Gregory Hood. Tonight's story begins in a small and shoddy waterfront bar in San Francisco, a bar affectionately referred to by its regular customers as Bottleneck Bill. The barkeep, a gentleman by the name of Bill, stands talking to his only patron, a small, softly spoken man who sits on a bar stool opposite.
Hiya, friend, Larry. I've been okay, Bill.
Yeah, what's new?
Got something I want to show you.
Go ahead, the place is empty.
Get a load of these. Ever see coins like that?
Hey, what kind of crazy moolah is that? All screwy shapes with funny letters on them. What are they, lad?
That's what I want to find out. I took them to a hawk shop on Market, but the guy acted kind of funny, so I screamed. I got a hunch they're worth big dough.
Where'd you get them, Larry? Now, you know better than to get curious like that, Bill.
Okay, so they're hot. You know I don't handle that kind of stuff.
Take it easy. I'm not asking you to handle it.
Then why did you come to me?
Because you know people I don't. People that can be useful. Play ball, Bill, and I'll cut you in.
What's the deal?
You know that guy, Gregory Hood, don't you?
Sure, I know him every once in a while.
All this old-fashioned, hardy, crafty stuff is his racket. He'd know what it's worth.
If you think he'll fence for you, you're crazy. He's strictly on the level.
All I want from him is information.
You want me to take this stuff to him?
He's still a rat. He might call in on the cops. This stuff's red hot, Bill, and it's liable to pop like dynamite. I gotta dress this up a little. They say this Hood guy's a sucker for dames. I figured we might send Norma.
Wait a minute, Larry. Norma's my girl.
Sure, sure she is. But all I'm asking to do is go and see this Hood guy. And I got the whole thing doped out. Now, here's what we'll do, Bill. And I bet he falls for it.
Oh, how do you do, Miss Haywood? Sit down, won't you?
Thank you, Mr. Hood.
Oh, would you like a cigarette?
No, thank you. Mr. Hood, I've come to you because I'm told you're the one person who can help me.
Well, I'll do my best. What's the trouble?
Well, I received a package through the mail today. This coin was inside it.
May I look at it?
There.
Thank you.
I could see it was old and probably valuable, so I brought it to you.
Well, I'll say it's valuable. This is a perfect specimen of 16th century Korean money. There's no mistaking it. Oh, if you want to sell this, Miss Haywood, I'd be very happy to buy.
Well, that isn't exactly why I came here, Mr. Hood.
Huh?
I want you to help me get hold of the rest of them.
The rest? You mean you have a collection of these coins?
Read this note, Mr. Hood. I think it will explain everything. It came in the package this morning.
Huh. If you want the rest of the collection, come to Bottleneck Bill's, ask for Larry.
Mr. Hood, I'm afraid to go there. It sounds like some sort of trick.
Let me get a couple of things straight. Had you ever heard of this collection of coins before?
Never. And I don't know anyone named Larry.
Huh. Well, if it's a trap, why bait it with a valuable coin like this? I don't get it, but I'm mighty curious.
Then perhaps you'll keep
that... Keep that date for you? With Hayward, I can hardly wait.
Hi, Greg.
Hello, Bill.
What'll it be?
Let's have a glass of sherry, please.
Okay. You haven't been around lately, Craig.
No. What's new?
Mighty little. Here's the sherry.
Thanks. Bill.
Yeah.
You know a guy named Larry?
Larry? Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's sitting in that booth over there. Said he was expecting someone, only it was a dame.
Well, he'll be disappointed. How well do you know the guy, Bill?
Well, he's new around here. Been in a couple of times, that's all.
Think he's okay?
Yeah, I'd say so. Seems to have plenty of jack. Talks smooth.
Not necessarily the hallmarks of a good citizen. Much obliged, Bill.
Yeah, you're welcome, Greg.
Larry?
Yeah?
I know I'm a poor substitute for Norma, but I'm keeping her appointment.
Norma Haywood? What do you know about her?
Recognize this coin?
Huh? Who are you, mister?
The name's Hood. Gregory Hood.
Why did Norma go to you?
Mainly because I'm in the importing business, I guess. She wanted to know if the coin was valuable.
Is it?
Certainly is. I'm curious to see the rest of the collection.
Okay. Since you're acting for Norma, I'll show it to you. How about coming up to my hotel?
Before I do that, Larry, I'd like a little more dope on this deal. Norma said she'd never heard of you or the coin. What's the tie-in?
Well, you see, a pal of mine had a crush on Norma. His name doesn't matter because he's dead now. So, when he knew he was dying, he gave me the collection. Picked it up in China. He told me to track down Norma and give it to her.
Well, what was the idea of sending just one of the coins?
Well, he wanted me to check up on her. If she wasn't hitched up to some other guy, then he wanted her to have the whole collection.
And you figured that one of the coins would intrigue her, she'd keep the data, and you'd be able to do your checking up, huh?
Yeah, that's it, Mr. Hood.
Instead of which, you scared her and she sent me, and I'm afraid I can't tell you a thing about her private life.
That can wait. Why don't we go up to our hotel, huh? You're an expert. I'd like to get your opinion on the stuff.
All right, Larry, let's go. Larry, this is one of the finest collections of ancient coins I ever laid eyes on.
Valuable, huh?
Yes, indeed. Look here. This copper coin with the square hole in the middle. That's Tian Feng period. This gold penny's English Henry III. Yes, my friend Norma would be a wealthy girl if she ever inherited these.
That's the way my pal wanted it. Too bad he died.
Hmm? It's too bad he never lived.
What? I don't get you, Mr. Hood.
Don't play me for a sucker any longer, Larry. I spotted this gag half an hour ago. I was stringing along with it because I was curious.
I still don't get you.
Listen, Larry, you read too many whodunits. I noticed your very complete collection of mystery fiction when I first came in. They've overdeveloped your imagination. I never heard such a corny plot as the one you dreamed up to get me here.
Now, what would my motive be for lying?
That's easy. You've got stolen goods. You don't know what they're worth, and before you go to a fence, you want to get an expert's appraisal. So you dream up the idea of a girl as decoy and go into the whole wacky routine.
Good, you're a smart man.
Thank you. But you don't have to be smart to figure this one out, my friend. As a matter of fact, I'm insulted that you thought I'd fall for it.
Are you also smart enough to keep your mouth shut? You know, I could make it well worth your while, Hood.
Uh-huh. Next move's bribery, huh? Then comes coercion, I'm sure. No, Larry, no dice. If I turned crook, I'd go into the big time.
And you're not leaving here.
Oh, you want to play rough, huh?
Fuck yeah.
What's the size?
Why don't you try on this blackjack, huh?
So I read too many detective stories, do I, Mr. Gregory Hood? We'll see about that. Hello. Give me room 212. Hank? This is Larry. Ah, I'm in my room. Come up here right away. Ah, don't bring Louis with you. And don't ask questions. We got work to do. Yeah. Yeah, I got someone here who I want to get rid of.
Who is he, Larry?
A guy by the name of Gregory Hood.
Why'd you let him have it?
He spotted my gag. He knows the coins are hot. He turned us in.
Why don't we finish him off?
No need to get mixed up in a murder, that Hank.
What are you going to do with him?
We'll get him down the fire escape and into your car. And drive him out onto the Presidio and let him sleep it off.
Then he wakes up and brings a cop straight here? Nuts to that.
I'm the boss, Hank. And what I say goes.
Didn't Louie and me help you in a snatch? Won't we stand to go on a spot with you? This guy slaps the cops on us? They'll come straight here.
As soon as we got him out of here, I'm checking out and leaving town.
Yeah? How about Louie and me? Supposing we don't want to blow town. Maybe you're thinking of going by yourself and taking a grab with you, huh? Are you a lousy double-crosser? That was your plan, right?
You're crazy. Hey, what are you putting those gloves on?
So I'm going to finish this guy off. I don't want to leave no fingerprints. I'll give him a couple of jabs with his knife. He won't feel nothing.
Hank, don't be a dope. Give me that knife.
Yeah, try and get
it. Give it to me.
Okay. Here it is. Oh. You always like to give orders. Let's see how you can give them with a knife in your belly. Give me 212. Yeah. Hello, Louie. This is Hank. Look, I'm in Larry's room. Come right up, will you? I don't think the boss is feeling so good.
Hey, Hank, why'd you slice him for?
Yeah, he's gonna blow town, Louie. Leave us to take the rap.
He ain't dead yet.
Here, help me put these gloves of mine on the other stiff.
He dead, too?
No. I relayed him out with a blackjack. He's only unconscious.
Why are you putting your gloves on him?
Now, look, you won't get it, Louis, but I figured out a very neat frame for Larry's murder, see? I put my gloves on his hood guy. We scram. I put in a call to the cops. And when they come here, what do they find?
Yeah, I can get that. They find Larry dead with a knife in him and... They find this guy wearing your gloves?
Sure. There are no prints on the knife, so what did he say? They say this Gregory Hood guy has knocked him off. I'm in the clear.
Yeah, Yeah, gee, Hank, that's smart.
Sure it is. You and me will blow town with them coins.
Hey, look at Larry. He's drawing something on the floor in red ink.
Ink? It must have spilled when the table tipped over. Hey, that's an arrow. And it's pointing right at Gregory Hood. What a swell. Thanks, Larry. You're helping me put the finger on the wrong guy.
Wood & Company Importers.
This is Sanderson Taylor. Is Greg there?
No, Mr. Taylor, he isn't, and I'm worried about him. I was going to call you.
What's wrong, Miss Vance?
Well, he went out of the office just after lunch. He said he'd only be gone half an hour. He had two very important appointments this afternoon, but he hasn't been back, and he hasn't called.
Well, I've known him to switch plans, but he always keeps in touch. You say where he was going?
Yes, Mr. Taylor, to a place he called Bottleneck Bill's.
Bottleneck Bill's? Oh, yes, I know that. So that's a tough hangout. Thank you, Miss Ferris.
You're going over there?
Right away. Looks like one case of Gregory Hood that I may have to solve. While we're waiting for Sandy to catch up with Gregory Hood, I'd like to make a suggestion. It's simply this. Whenever you're having any kind of peach dessert, be sure Petri California Muscatel wine is on the table, too. Like with peach cake, peach cookies, peach shortcake, or even if you're serving a delicious dish of chilled canned peaches. Believe me, Petri Muscatel with peaches makes a perfect combination. That Petri Muscatel is such a wonderful wine, so clear, so rich and fragrant, that it's just made for peaches. And in nearly every locality, your Petri wine dealer can give you a little recipe folder showing you how to make unusual and delightful desserts with peaches to serve with Petri Muscatel. But be sure you get Petri Muscatel. Wines are good wines. And now, back to the casebook of Gregory Hood and the adventure of the Eloquent Corpse. As we rejoin our story, Sanderson Taylor, Greg's friend and attorney, is cross-questioning Bill, the owner of the bar known as Bottleneck.
That's all I can tell you, Mr. Taylor. Greg was out with this guy about 2:30.
Uh-huh, and you don't know anything about the man except that his name was Larry.
Yeah, that's right. He's only been in here a couple of times.
You don't know where he lives?
No. Come to think of it, I tell you who might be able to give you the dope.
Well, yeah, who's that?
It's Dottie Bronson. This Larry was in here with her the first time he came in.
Oh, I see. You know her address?
Yeah, sure do. Let's see. 117 Denmark. That's right off market.
Denmark. Dottie Bronson, huh?
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Bill. How much obliged. Miss Bronson?
Yeah?
I'm a friend of Larry's.
There ain't nothing wrong with Larry, is there?
Well, I don't think so. May I come in?
Sure. Sure, come in, mister. You say you're a friend of Larry's. I ain't never seen you before. And you don't look like his type.
Well, I'm not exactly his friend, Miss Bronson.
Then why'd you say you were? What are you, a dick?
No, Miss Bronson. I'm an attorney. And I'm looking for a friend of mine who was last seen with Larry about 2:30 this afternoon.
Yeah? Where were they?
Bottleneck Bill's bar. They left there together. My friend hasn't been heard from since, and I'm worried about
him. I'm worried about Larry. We had a date at 4 and he didn't show up. Called his hotel room and didn't get an answer for a while. A quarter of an hour ago, I got a man talking. Sound like a dick to me, and I'm scared.
Well, so am I. If you give me Larry's address, I'll go over there.
How do I know I can trust you, Miss?
Oh, my dear young lady, now...
Well, I guess you're okay. I'll give you the address. I'll go over with you, except the cops know me. I want to watch out for Larry. But... You call me as soon as you get there?
Certainly, and don't you worry, Miss Bronson. I'm sure there's nothing wrong.
Yeah. You ain't worried any more than I am. We're both jittering because there's a chill in the air this time of year. Yeah, okay, mister. I'll be waiting for that call.
Mr. Taylor, I was wondering when you'd get here.
Oh, Sergeant Barton, what's the homicide squad doing here?
Plenty, and we're lousy with clues. They're even marked out on the floor for us this time. Come in, Mr. Taylor.
Yes, thank you.
Is Greg here?
Yeah, but he's still napping, Mr. Taylor, and the police surgeon's working him over.
The surgeon?
Oh, thank you, easy, Mr. Taylor. He's okay.
Who's on this kid?
Lieutenant Silvers.
Yes, it's a good thing I am. Greg's in a jam.
But what's happened to him?
He's out cold, slugged with a blackjack, but he's going to be okay.
Yeah, but what happened, Lieutenant?
I'm not sure yet until Greg can start to talk, but you can take a look for yourself. That dead body on the floor with a knife in his belly. We checked his identification. Larry Masterson. He lives here.
And Greg's lying beside him. How is he, Doctor?
He's coming to.
His lips are beginning to move.
What?
Well, gee, how do you feel, Greg?
It's as if I dived headfirst into an empty swimming pool. And I got a good hard skull. Mighty glad to see you, though, Sandy, you old bloodhound. How'd you trail me? Oh!
Here, Greg, let me give you a hand.
Lieutenant Silvers. And Sergeant Barton, too, this old home week.
Let's hear your story, Hood.
You mean who slugged me? It was a guy by the name of Larry.
And if you look behind you, you'll see the body of the man in question, neatly stabbed through the belly.
Holy smoke. While you were unconscious, Greg, somebody must have come in here and stabbed him.
Hey, where'd I get these gloves? I wasn't wearing them when I came in here.
Well, somebody must have slipped them on you after you passed out.
There's another puzzle, Greg.
Huh?
Look at these diagrams in ink on the floor. And notice the red ink on the dead man's finger.
Yes, the S with the lines through it. But that's a dollar sign.
Yeah. Mary's made an arrow.
An arrow that was pointing at exactly where you were lying, Greg.
Yeah, but the arrow also points to this other drawing. Pretty crude, but it looks like a lighted pipe. Obviously, the dead man is trying to leave a message, the clue to his murderer's identity.
Maybe so, Greg. I haven't much faith in those kind of things.
Well, Lieutenant, you can be sure the dying man didn't do that doodling just to amuse himself.
Sam, how did you hear of the murder?
We got an anonymous phone call telling us to come up here and we'd find a body.
Oh? Well, I think I see it. The killer thought he'd frame me by putting these gloves on me, knowing that a smart murderer uses gloves. Then he'd put in the call for you, figuring he'd walk in and nab me.
Well, it's possible. But I've got to look at facts, Greg. And that arrow was pointing straight at you.
Oh, Lieutenant, you can't suspect Gray.
I can suspect anyone in my business. You never know what a man might do when he's cornered.
Stan, you have a nasty, suspicious mind, and I'm going to prove it to you. The dead man was a whodunit fan.
Yes, I noticed those mystery books on his table over there.
Therefore, he knew about dying message gags.
Well,
he tried to leave one by drawing those ink stains on the floor. After he died, the killer spotted the message and put his gloves on me, the gloves he'd worn when he stabbed Larry. He planned to pin the rap on me.
Prove it to me, Greg. That's all I ask.
You've got to prove it, Greg, to get yourself in the clear.
So, wait a minute. A dollar sign, an arrow, and a pipe. You know, could be I've got it.
Who is it, Greg?
Get me a list of the dead man's friends, guys that were close to him. When I got that, I think I can point out the killer.
List of his friends?
Yeah.
Okay, but that's going to take time.
I think I can speed things up a little, Lieutenant. I tracked Greg here tonight by talking to Larry's girlfriend, Dottie Bronson. Let's go and call on her. I'll bet she'll be glad to help. Oh, come on. Take it easy, Daddy.
Lily got him. How'd they do it, Hank?
Oh, somebody sliced him.
You sure he's dead?
Sure, I'm sure. Talked to the hotel manager and he talked to the doc. I'll just get my hands on that guy. And maybe I can. You'll stick with me.
They get the rat that wiped out Larry? You can bet on it.
Atta gal. You and me can go places, Dottie. You're a smart kid.
Oh, lay off on Hank, will you? Larry ain't even in his casket.
I'll go see who it is, Vicky.
Now, what do you guys want?
Some information.
Why?
Lieutenant Silvers of Homicide.
The dick, huh? Come here to tell me that Larry's rubbed out, I guess.
Now, Miss Bronson, obviously you know that fact. We've come here so that you can help us find his killer.
So are you. I know your friend. He's the attorney at law who forgets to make phone calls.
I'm sorry about that.
Skip it. I asked you who you were.
The name is Hood. I think I was the next to last person to see Larry alive.
Ain't that pathetic? Did you bring a copy of his will?
Take it easy, Daddy. We're here to help you.
Yeah? Well, who can help me now?
You'd like to find out who killed Larry, wouldn't you?
Sure. What can I do?
Listen to Mr. Hood. Maybe you can help give us the clue to the murder.
Sure. I'll polish up the crystal ball. Shoot, Mr. Hood. What's the $64 question?
A simple one. Give me the names of Larry's closest friends.
That's easy. I only had three. Were close. Me, Louis Horton,
Who's Louis Horton?
Oh, he's a dumb lug that wouldn't know which end of a knife was sharpest, even if he sat on it. He worked with Larry.
And who was the third friend, Miss Bronson?
It was me, Lieutenant.
And what's your name?
Jackson.
The first name, Mr. Jackson?
Henry.
I wouldn't by any chance call you Hank, would they, Henry?
Sure. Everybody calls me Hank. Why?
There's your man, Stan. He killed Larry Masterson.
Oh, you're crazy.
No, I think I'm quite on the beam considering the crack of my dome a little while ago.
What's your alibi, Hank?
If I needed one, Dottie here could give it. I was here with you when Larry was bumped off, wasn't I, Dave?
Well,
what time was that, Hank?
About 2:15, wasn't it, Dottie?
That's an interesting alibi. The best the police surgeon could say was the guy died somewhere between 2 and 3. We didn't find the dead body until about 5:30, and we haven't released a word about time yet.
Yeah, you're a little too ready with your alibis, eh?
Now, listen, mister, I don't know nothing about this.
No, nothing except that you killed him.
Yeah, try and prove
it. Sure, I will. The gloves you planted on me had a slight flaw. There was a hole in the right thumb. There was a thumbprint on the knife, and it wasn't mine. It was yours. We checked it.
Yeah, but Greg...
Wait a minute, Sam. How's about that fingerprint, Hank?
Which way was the print pointing, Mr. Smart Guy?
Towards the blade.
Sure. But if you stab a guy, the print would point the other way.
Only if it were a downward blow. This wound was up from under the heart in the best professional stabbing manner, which means that your print was just where it should have been.
But there wasn't no holes in those gloves. Anyway, the arrow was pointing at you.
That's enough, Hank. How did you know that if you weren't there?
Well, I you dirty lout. I was lying when I gave that alibi for you. I ain't seen you all day. And I hope I never see you again.
Now, what do you say, Hank? We've got you every way.
Okay. All right, I kill Larry. He's trying to double-cross me. He had it coming to him. All right, take me away, copper. I don't like the company you keep.
Well, Greg?
Well, Sandy?
I can understand you're wanting a drink, but... Did we have to come back to bottleneck bills?
Well, we came back for two reasons. I wanted to get an aspirin, and this is where I came out on this deal. I'd like to round out the cycle.
Mm-hmm. You know, Greg, I still don't understand what that dollar sign is.
Well, it wasn't a dollar sign, Sandy.
Well, that's the way I learned it at school. You make an S and draw two lines through it.
Very true, but it might also be a way to cross out the letter S. The arrow pointed at the shank of the lighted pipe, cross out the letter S and shank, and you have Hank, the name of the murderer.
Oh, yes, of course. Another thing puzzled me, though, Greg. How did you have time to check the thumbprint on the knife handle?
Well, Sandy, there was no thumbprint.
No?
And there was no hole in the glove. I just said those things to scare Hank into a confession.
Well, Greg, you scared the daylights out of me today.
Me too, Sandy, but don't act mad.
Well, I am mad. You walked into a trap that was clumsily baited. That's not like you.
Sure, but the bait was juicy. Anyway, there's no great harm.
Oh, but there might have been. You darn near got killed and nearly got framed for murder.
All for the sake of the firm, Sandy.
Greg, don't try and tell me you walked into this deal today because you were thinking of the business.
Sure I was. Hood and Company could have come out of this mess very nicely. That was quite a valuable collection of coins. I'll be proud to return them to their owners.
Very altruistic, but we should stop playing cops and robbers.
I'm sorry, Sandy. And I'm darn grateful for your help. Just the same, Sandy, promise me one thing.
Huh? Why, sure. What is it, Greg?
Don't let's quote this little adventure. After all, I spent half of the case as an unconscious suspect. No, Sandy, this will be an unpublished chapter from the casebook of Gregory Hood.
Greg, you got through safely that time, but you're awful lucky Masterson left that clue.
Well, yes, Harry, but of course there's always a clue somewhere if you can find it and figure it out.
Yeah, but deliver me from figuring out clues as tough as that dollar sign in the pipe shank.
Well, you could do it.
And don't kid me.
Well, sure you could. For instance, suppose you're sitting at a table.
Mm-hmm.
On the cloth, someone has drawn with a pencil not a dollar sign, but a cent sign.
Yeah.
And an arrow pointing at an empty wine glass.
Ah, light dawns. It's about Petri wine, but what about it?
Well, easy. An empty wine glass calls for some good wine, doesn't it?
Yeah, but that scent sign...
Look, Harry, if you want good wine, what is it that makes sense?
Oh, brother, was I slow on that. Well, slow or not, it does make sense to order Petri when you want good wine. Petri wine has just got to be good. You see, the Petri family has been making wine for generations now. The art of making fine wine is a heritage in the Petri family, passed on down from father to son
from father to son. So just think of all those years of skill and experience that go into making Petri wine. It's no wonder Petri wine is so good. And it's no wonder the Petri business has grown and grown until today the Petri family is America's largest independent winemaker. Yes, the making of Petri wine is a family affair. And the Petri family has every intention of keeping it just that. So you know the name Petri on a bottle of wine is more than a trademark. It's the personal assurance of the Petri family that Petri wine is and always will be good wine. The Casebook of Gregory Hood is written by Dennis Green and Anthony Boucher. Original music composed and played by Dean Fossler. Elliot Lewis plays the part of Gregory Hood, and Sanderson Taylor is played by Howard McNear. The Petri Wine Company of San Francisco, California, invites you to tune in again next week, same time, same station. The Casebook of Gregory Hood comes to you from our Hollywood studio. This is Harry Bartell saying good night for the Petri family. For a solid hour of exciting mystery dramas, listen every Monday on most of these same stations at 8 o'clock to Richard Davis, Private Investigator, followed immediately by The Casebook of Gregory Hood. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
The Casebook of Gregory Hood, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 14th of October, 1946, on the Mutual Broadcasting System. Wrapping up this hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday, be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden age. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for tuning in.